It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm your host, Ben Carnes, and I'm joined this morning by representatives from a couple of exciting digital products, one within the federal government over at the Department of Veterans Affairs and another outside the federal government. My first guest is Nicholas Holtz, who is here from the United States Digital Service. Nicholas serves on the digital services team at the Department of Veterans Affairs, where the digital service has been hard at work on efforts to both modernize more generally the Veterans Affairs Department's overall customer service experience, as well as to enable veterans, more specifically Nicholas's team, to enable veterans to more easily track the status of their appeals throughout the process. Thanks for being with me this morning.
Sure, thank you.
Can you give me a bit of an overview of what the digital service, I guess, actually before I did the interview, I was telling a couple of people who I was talking to, and even some people who are close to government were confused where the digital service actually sits. So they asked me, was it a GSA thing? And I think it's some people get a bit confused with the number of sort of labs and exciting projects going on right now. Where is digital service actually situated?
Right. So we're in a number of different departments across government. Our parent headquarters is based out of OMB, specifically the Executive Office of the President. It started, after, of course, the healthcare.gov large failure. And but we have agency teams throughout a number of different departments, Department of Veterans Affairs, DOD, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, Small Business Administration, and actually GSA as well.
And so you are, I guess there are a couple of teams right now working on Veterans Affairs. So there's some effort right now to modernize more broadly the VA. What are the components that go into that? I guess obviously there's a website component to it. There's an external component and an internal component. What is USDS's role right now in kind of bringing the VA up to speed?
Sure. So we're working on a lot of different fronts, and there is this long-term vision of for on the veteran-facing side of things, making giving veterans the best online experience in the federal government, on par with a lot of private sector companies, the Fortune 500 companies out there, and we're doing a number of things to get there. One of the things, right now veterans are going to a lot of different places in VA if they want to, track and apply for benefits, or the same with healthcare. And so we're looking to consolidate a lot of that into a single VA.gov user experience that that provides veterans and a really clear access to the tools that they need, and avoids a lot of the confusion that can come with having to navigate across a number of different sites to find and track and apply for those benefits. We are also looking to really personalize things for veterans. VA has a lot of data about veterans. We get data from DOD. Veterans know the experience of filling out form after form, oftentimes repeating data entry and providing the same information they provide to VA, to one part of VA to another. And so we're looking to consolidate that data and actually turn it around and make it usable for the veteran, make things easier for them because we can personalize services for them, show them what they're eligible for, and help them apply for it. We are working on helping build the ability for veterans to kind of do a lot of self-service. There's a lot of efforts that have gone on there, but providing them really modern tools to streamline the ability to apply for benefits and actually follow those all the way through.
And you mentioned being competitive with the private sector. There was another FedScoop article that referenced VA's sort of goal. I'm not sure if it's actually a stated goal of, I believe it is, of being comparable in performance and in customer experience to places like Bank of America and USAA. So more broadly, that's an effort that's going on. And much of this is, I mean, obviously, there's no dancing around. Much of it is responsive to a very kind of politically tenuous situation maybe a decade or so back. But then kind of following that in the last couple of years in 2017 was the passage of the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, which that brought about quite a few changes, which you can maybe speak to a little bit, that then necessitated your current work over there.
Right. So and that's the work that my team and I focus on. And we are building out a suite of applications to manage the VA appeals process. The VA appeals process, you know, started back in the 1930s and over many, many decades was suffered from just new law after new law being put on top of it without a real coherent set of thinking in terms of how is this actually going to improve the experience veterans have. So a few years ago, VA started really looking at this process and to VA's credit, you know, identified it as a broken process, one that was not serving veterans well. And there were a couple of pieces that they definitely realized needed to be fixed. One was on the technology front. The other one was the laws themselves that constrained VA in terms of a lot of what it was doing. And so Digital Service came in on the aspect of this, looking at what technology was in place to process appeals and looking at ways to improve processes with the technology and get veterans answers faster. The VA has processed appeals for decades in a tool called VACOLS. Mm-hmm. Sounds like bagels. We actually have a little bagels mascot that we use. But VACOLS was built in 1979 originally, and VA identified in 1992 that it was outdated and needed to be replaced. Wow. That's what we're doing now.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so we're building out CaseFlow, which is, it's a web-based suite of applications that some of it is that we were able to make it veteran-facing by improving the data and being able to provide that back to them. Earlier in March of this year, we launched a tool that showed veterans where they were in line for waiting for an appeal for the first time ever. And that might not sound like a lot, but veterans regularly have to wait for 5 or 7 years for a decision, and that's a long time to sit there without really knowing where you are and what's going on.
That obviously gets at an issue that has pretty broad national appeal and agreement that, everybody kind of agrees that regardless of what the root cause of any issues happens to be, that ultimately what we want to get to is a program or a service, an agency that can best serve veterans. So when you're talking about, waiting lists, et cetera, those are issues that people spend a lot of time talking about in relation to the VA. So obviously they're perhaps more important there than in other agencies. And I think it's worth noting that, the number of people, the number of transactions and submissions that you have to deal with is pretty considerable. You guys are touching hundreds of thousands of people every year. So it's a pretty impressive effort that you're working on. What is your the appeals process? I had found a report from the Veterans Board of Appeals that said that in 2016, I think there were about 50,000 to 60,000. What is the actual? What are the numbers that you guys are looking at? The number of submissions you mentioned. There's quite a bit of coding going on a daily basis that you guys have to submit. What does that actually look like?
So right now, there are close to around 400,000 veterans with a pending appeal, and close to 500,000 actual pending appeals. One of the things that they're trying to do with this law is provide veterans choices to streamline and kind of cut out some of that wait time. You mentioned the Appeals Modernization Act,
right,
that passed in 2017 to identify ways that veterans can make choices for themselves about what sort of due process that they really feel like their claim needs and get to as efficient an answer as possible. And so that is, we have been... When that law passed, we had to really adapt pretty quickly. We're in this middle of this process to build out a new suite of tools to manage this this existing process, and suddenly the process completely changed on us. It grew much more complex and required a lot of integration with systems in ways that VA had never done before. And so as we are heading towards the February 2019 implementation date. That's something that we are going fast and furious with, just an incredible team behind us to make sure that we are helping VA get ready to implement that law.
And we will continue talking about that. We have to take a quick break, but we'll pick up that conversation here on Fed Talk on 1500 AM Federal News Radio.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm your host, Ben Carnes, and I'm joined by Nicholas Holtz from the United States Digital Service. He's working on the team at the Department of Veterans Affairs to modernize the VA's digital presence, as well as to improve the customer experience, specifically involving when veterans have appeals that they have to submit. And then my second guest who I want to bring in is Megan Vorland. She's the Director of Programs at DECODE. And DECODE, I believe, is you call yourself an accelerator program. And is it accurate to say you help innovative startups, mostly smaller startups, connect with the federal government who might not otherwise be able to do so?
Yeah, so our overall mission is to actually get better tech into the government. And so that ranges, we're stage agnostic. We end up working with Series A, Series B companies, so mm-hmm. midsize.
Mm-hmm. And so what can you give us kind of an idea of what you guys have done thus far? I saw on your website just generally that you say that you've helped implement something like 40 technologies in the federal government across agencies. So, I mean, what are some of the projects that you guys have been working on and some of the successes that you've had in the last bit? I know actually that FCW had listed your president as one of the Fed 100 last year. So obviously you guys are making some noise and doing good things.
Yeah, yeah. We hope that we're bringing in a lot of new tech into the federal government. So a couple things is that we run an accelerator program. So we run a 3-month accelerator program for emerging technologies that are interested in working with people like the VA Digital mm-hmm. Service and Nicholas. And some of the successes that we've seen are really dual technologies, so technologies that have some really good private sector traction that can find a really good use case in the government. So, for example, if we're talking about VA, we're talking about how to better analyze and predict veteran suicide. So we have a company that we've worked with named Data Robot, and they're really looking and digging down into that data using AI and machine learning algorithms to better predict that nationwide crisis. And we also have other technologies that are doing really good things at DOD and DHS, but looking at their use case in the private sector and being able to transfer it into the government. So, for example, we have in places where you're looking in the intelligence community and you might have an analyst looking at videos over and over and over again. They might see big changes. This Bush is gone now, but they might not really recognize very small changes. And we have a technology, Hive Mapper, that will absolutely detect that small change and be able to tell you, you know, what is the volume of dirt that's moved, et cetera, et cetera. So they're finding the federal government use cases really applicable.
Yeah, and the I actually encountered a story on the Data Robot, or what I assume is the Data Robot, not too long ago. And I find that use pretty compelling because essentially, if I understood it correctly, it's sort of a predictive algorithm that's attempting to detect red flags and say if there are particular signs there, then this veteran might be someone that we want to reach out to more so than, you know, that we want to put on a priority list for outreach, which is a pretty fascinating way of looking at it and trying to kind of get ahead of the curve and see the signs before.
Absolutely.
So that's it's a pretty impressive project. Where does that stand right now? That was just piloted at.
So that is definitely one of their use cases. I'm not sure if it's been fully implemented or piloted at this point, but it's one of them that the data science team at Data Robot is able to run those algorithms, and they have been able to take training data and they've been able to take some fake data. You're working with HIPAA data here, and be able to show that they can actually put pins in those specific outliers. And so they're making their case.
And I guess it was interesting when we just before we came on the air, you had mentioned that Nicholas, it's kind of a small world, I guess, in the federal space. And the in addition to the DECODE receiving the Fed 100 recognition, I wanted to point out that the Department of Veterans Affairs Digital Services team had also been recognized recently. And I found it interesting that you had said off air that you know, the VA Digital Service team is kind of where it's at right now. And I've seen, you know, similar things to that effect. And one of the things that I've tried to do on the program here is focus on those positive stories going on within government, because there are so many innovative labs, et cetera, that are just maybe tucked away within agencies and don't get a lot of attention. So I wanted to point out that the recent award, I guess it was Marcella Jacobs at the Digital Service team, received a medal for some of the work that you guys are working on over there. So I guess the more broadly, you're speaking about the AI work that you guys do with Data Robot, there was another use case there. Sorry.
Yeah. So I mentioned Hive Mapper. We also are working with a technology called Uptake that is working in the private sector. Again, working on engines, big engines, and trains and airplanes. But very, very applicable to right. The federal government. So Department of Transportation, DOD, looking at predictive maintenance and being able to actually save the taxpayer a ton of money because they're reducing the downtime, but also being able to reduce the risk of if you have someone in the field in a battle zone and this machine that they're on is possibly going to go down, that's a risk.
And can you give a basic overview? I'm not sure how many people are familiar with what an accelerator program actually looks like and what is the format. So you're a small business and you decide you want to get involved. How does DECODE actually function and help those
absolutely.
Companies?
Absolutely. So we're a accelerator program that is focused on companies that are looking to get into federal. So our key differentiator is you have to want to get into federal, or we have to find you and talk you into wanting to get into federal. We think there's big opportunities. The companies that we work with day in and day out see the mission of the federal government as something that they want to help. They want to get in and they want to solve these toughest challenges. So we run a 3-month accelerator program. It's a competitive application process on the front end. And within the 3 months, the goal is to put everything in one place for you. So everything from the contracting, from the dotting your I's and crossing your T's of doing your SAM registration and all of the paperwork, but all of that combined with a good go-to-market strategy. So what are your use cases in the private sector? How do you target those into the federal government? And then who should you be talking to? What is the ecosystem inside the Beltway that you need to know, whether that's big systems integrators that you need to be partnering with, or it's small businesses, or it's 8A firms. So we try and put everything in one place for the company.
And I think that speaks to something that Nicholas was also speaking about, which is the importance, especially in working on some of these digital initiatives. I know that there's a kind of unrelated, but a cybersecurity shortage, they say, and the tens of thousands of positions that the federal government just can't fill. So the importance of being able to bring in the correct people and make the correct connections. Nicholas, you said that was something that at USDS has been a key to your success.
Absolutely. I think no matter what sort of project that you're working on, the only way you're going to be successful in the technical side of the federal government is by bringing in these really talented partners. And so this is one area I'm pretty passionate about. Because I've seen, I think, the results of some work that Digital Service did really early on, when Caseflow was really at just an infant, if you will, we needed contract support. And so when we put out the RFP, like, we went out and actually included a coding challenge with that. And, we gave applicants 72 hours to build a working application. It had to be secure, and it had to be usable, and we had to be able to see all of their work. And so, a lot of times when federal government goes out and, seeks seeks bids on contracts, you get a lot of words. But, you know, knowing that those words can be backed up is a big deal. And so, like, the fact that we've had the talent, incredible talent, you know, from our contractors supporting us is the only reason that we've been able to be successful to this point. And I mean, the digital service side does a lot to kind of break down barriers, but the legwork is being done by the just really amazing people that are supporting us. In fact, you know, talking about awards, I think one of just a remarkable little number, you know, DC FemTech just recognized 54 women in DC mm-hmm. in the technical sphere, and five of those women. Four have been working on the Caseload project.
Wow.
One of those other 54 is actually joining this week. And so,
wow.
like, we – and a lot of this is – it's because we were able to go out and find really talented people that have continued to just thrive.
Yeah, and I mean, that approach is kind of antithetical to at least the perceived way that government operates and the way, frankly, it just operates, which is that – you know, you have these challenges and they just kind of persist for a long time. So the idea of being able to have in 72 hours functional code that actually solves a big problem is I attended a similar hackathon and coding challenge at Google that was precisely this. It was a nonprofit funded, you know, let's look at the big challenges. I wonder at Decode, kind of a similar question. What has that looked like when you take a small business and you see this need that you know needs to be met? What is the timeline? I mean, is it something where you're able to get them connected and they're able to hit the ground running pretty quickly? I guess that's the idea of an accelerator program.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the federal government is slow, mm-hmm. to say the least. I think that there have been amazing strides, especially in the last couple of years, around making it more accessible, mm-hmm. faster. You have programs like DHS's Silicon Valley office that are doing small-scale OTAs and doing and phasing it out. So you have phase one, phase two, phase three, different tranches of money come with each. You have places like DIUX who are putting out requirements really quickly. And these innovative – I want to come back to the VA and these innovative procurement vehicles. So by doing that coding challenge, you not only are making it more accessible for these small businesses and these companies that are really wanting to get in and wanting to get that past performance, but you're also putting money behind it, which I think is not always done across the board. So sometimes you'll have these challenges and it's great and it looks good and there's a nice mm-hmm. press release, but the VA is doing it and they're putting money behind it. And they're saying, coming out of this challenge, you are going to have a contract. And that is really important for the business, because otherwise they're typing away and they're doing their coding for free, essentially.
Yeah, and it is something I've noticed with the just across the board with challenges, et cetera, that they seem to be very kind of disparate. I mean, some are great and very thorough. Some are not so much and kind of seem to be just left there to sit and kind of die on the vine a little bit. So it's an interesting approach at VA that yeah, I assume that by being able to actually have the support of the agency and to have the support of USDS, that putting funding behind it makes a big difference in pulling in solid candidates, as evidenced by your team over there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I mean, it goes to the digital service playbook, like working with the contract team, bringing the contracting officer in place and allowing you to go out and find, as you mentioned, Megan, the mission-driven companies that can come in and I mean, perform, you know, even beyond what they're saying up front they're able to do. It's been a great success that we've experienced.
And so you, over at Decode right now, you have a new group that you're looking to connect to the federal government. Really briefly, if you could just give a kind of an overview of your current group, and then we can get into that a little bit more after this break.
Yeah, absolutely. We have an AI big data cohort going on right now. So we're almost in the middle. We're introducing them to partners, making sure that they know the ecosystem, and then we'll bring them back into town in a couple of weeks and do some more.
Great. So we'll take one quick break, and then we'll be back with our conversation with Nicholas Holtz and Megan Borland here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
If you're a federal law enforcement officer, then you know to do your job, you tap inside sources. To have a voice on policy and legislation, you join FLIOA. And when you want federal law enforcement officer news and up-to-date federal court decisions, you read FedAgent.com. If you aren't reading FedAgent.com, subscribe today. It's free. Don't let this source pass you by. I'm John Adler, president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500. I'm your host, Ben Carnes, and I am joined this morning by Nicholas Holtz at the United States Digital Service, who works on issues at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and by Megan Vorland, who's the Director of Programs at DECODE. And prior to the break, we were talking about some of the USDS, their ability to pull in talent was sort of as a result of being able to run unique events like the coding challenge, et cetera. Is USDS, you're obviously actively hiring, pulling in great candidates. Do you guys have any initiatives like that going on right now as far as challenges, et cetera, that you're looking at? Or what is the VA team? What does that look like over at USDS, and any other initiatives that you're currently running?
Sure. So we are, in addition to the work in the appeals world and the veteran-facing stuff, the other big piece that we're doing is actually moving VA to the cloud. Right now, VA spends around $1.2 billion a year on hosting. And, VA, the mission of VA is not about hosting data centers. Mm-hmm. It's about serving veterans and helping them with their healthcare and the benefits they've earned from their service. And so, we're working right now to, we're hoping to save up to 75% of those costs within 3 years and rely on, these private sector, cloud hosting environments that we think can provide allow VA to focus much more on the veteran rather when it comes to IT rather than all of the background noise. And so that is, that is another area where we're hoping to actually improve that veteran experience with better uptime, better services, better access.
And this is, obviously motivating the move is just the recognition that a lot of the systems that we're using are outdated. The classic example that's always trotted out is the IRS still relying on, code that's 30 or 40 years old in the master file system. So I wonder, with the appeals work, obviously the legislation last year caused a lot of changes and moved to a three-step appeals process, or three options for veterans in the appeals process. In addressing these programs where you have 400,000 veterans who are applying, et cetera, it seems like the big benefit of the digital space is obviously the savings and the efficiencies in vets.gov and the improvement of the VA website in this system that you're working on right now. Have you guys seen those efficiencies play out where you've been able to process them faster, and you the success stories from the veterans? Have you guys seen those?
There's a lot of process in place that no matter what technology you put in, you're not going to solve it. And so we are simultaneously working with the department to see where we can eliminate and streamline those processes. We have definitely seen areas where we have cut down on time that it takes. Like, for example, when the Board of Veterans Appeals issues a decision, prior to some work that we did, the way they would have to distribute these decisions to regional offices around the country and wait for those to get implemented, the long tail of that could be a few months. We've gotten it where you know, the 85th percentile, I believe, is down under 4 days now, you know, like,
wow.
And so in the scheme of things, you know, going from a few months to 4 days, I mean, that's a chunk of time. Mm-hmm. It's not going to address the 5 or 7 years a veteran might have been waiting, but you add that up across all the veterans that are affected, and I think there's major wins there. And the other thing that I think we're seeing from this effort is because so many things are changing in this environment right now, the work we're doing, like that work, for example, that was really focused on that legacy system, mm-hmm. the legacy world of appeals. And because this new law came in and changed everything, you know, we had to adapt incredibly quickly. And so, like, you know, shortly after this this law took was passed, we were facing a situation where VA had to integrate a number of systems and do it very quickly. Otherwise, they would not have really an adequate way to track veterans with all of these new options. And so, you know, we built a product called Caseflow Intake that integrates across different systems and is able to track veterans no matter which lane they choose, no matter how many times they choose that lane. And we took it from a concept to a production tool in the hands of VA employees who process this in under 5 weeks. And so, I mean, it all goes back to, I mean, as we were talking about earlier, the teams that are in place supporting it, but also the kind of the recognition of the need to truly be agile and to be able to adapt and find ways throughout this where you are changing and improving these processes. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you don't know what the process change might need to be when you first start a project. And so being able to adapt and react to changes that occur and have the people and the support within the department to do that is just a major win.
Yeah. And it does seem like one of those areas where you kind of, you know, we have the trade press articles, the Fed scoop and the GovExec, et cetera, and you're talking about these things. But, I mean, the actual on-the-ground applications of the work of some of these companies over at Decode and then over at USDS of the work on the appeals process, I mean, for a veteran, that could be a very much a life-changing thing to go from having to wait. You know, I know some of the average wait times at one point were, you know, in the hundreds of days for certain processes. So to go from, as you mentioned, months down to 4 days is no small thing. And I think it's easy to kind of lose sight of that in the very technical talking about the coding, et cetera. You had mentioned, Megan, just before the break, that your current cohort is focused on AI and big data. And I believe you also mentioned, Nicholas had talked about moving to the cloud. And obviously that's something that a lot of agencies are facing. It's, I think, in the private sector, safe to say that it's, you know, we're maybe in the federal government behind the curve a little bit on that. It seems like that adoption is kind of already in place in the private sector. But I believe you mentioned you guys also have some work coming up on moving to the cloud and enterprise in addition to your current cohort on AI.
Yeah, so the current cohort on AI big data is kicked off, going really well. We're our next cohort, which will kick off in about a month, or a little bit less than that, is going to be on enterprise and cloud. So we have some great companies coming in to look at it doesn't sound as sexy as probably AI does, but really, really necessary in the federal government, as was we did a DevOps cohort last year, really, really necessary in the federal government. And like you said, the federal government is a little bit behind on some of the adoption of the enterprise technologies, but that doesn't mean that they're not ready and wanting to get there. We also have information security coming up on the roadmap, and so applications are open now for that for companies that are looking at the federal government as a new sales channel. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do space tech.
it's very exciting. I mean, it's funny that you mention the artificial intelligence and the other items not sounding as interesting, because I actually, the last program I had a couple of tech reporters on, and we were discussing artificial intelligence, Bitcoin, blockchain, et cetera. And I mean, the fact is that you hear those things and they are kind of these sexy stories, and but the actual applications and agencies are often not very, yes. You know, it's tracking cell phones, et cetera. Whereas
Absolutely.
While the cloud and enterprise might not have that same initial appeal, my suspicion is that those programs are going to be possibly more impactful than some of the early stage artificial intelligence programs, because it's sort of a fundamental process that should be in place at this point.
Yes, and we see this across the board. So we did a fintech blockchain cohort last year, and with many of our blockchain companies, we said, stop talking about blockchain. You are managing a database. This is how you're doing it differently. This is how you're doing it more effectively. This is how you're doing it more securely. But we need to take the scary of blockchain out of it. And too often people conflate blockchain and cryptocurrencies, and that wasn't helping our case for these great database management companies that were looking to help the government be more secure in a lot of ways.
And you piqued my interest with the mention of the space technology. Actually, I'm intrigued. When you're running the cohorts, do you guys get an opportunity to go? I assume see the technologies that these the companies are offering. And so you said it's a 3-month program. Is that's from beginning? That's not including that. But the 3 months includes the whole whatever education you guys are doing, etc.
So it's 3 months from kickoff to closeout, and applications way forward on the front end. But the 3 months is you come to town a couple times, because as people in the Beltway know, that you can't really know and understand the Beltway and the learning curve here until you're actually here. You're physically here. So they come to town a couple times, the companies do, and then we do a lot of demos. We work with them through making their marketing materials more slanted towards federal and what that means, and what the verbiage that you hear often in federal, and frankly, the acronyms across the board. They come out with a PhD in acronyms.
Yeah, I again spent 7 years on the Hill and then came to the executive side for the first time recently, and it's the alphabet soup is hard to overstate. I'm wondering, just kind of generally, because you guys are in this space, and I know Decode specifically does a lot of work on artificial intelligence, as you've mentioned. I wonder if you have a sense of I've seen a lot of talk. The White House just created an office focused on artificial intelligence. I know DARPA has created a body on artificial intelligence. Each one claims to be the body that's kind of going to bring all of it under one umbrella. And I kind of wonder, I think USDS, you may have seen this also more broadly, whether on AI or otherwise, kind of these efforts to break down the silos, like you mentioned, and to allow these connections and to make sure that that we have a good view of cybersecurity, we have a good view of artificial intelligence, et cetera. I guess from your perspective, is there a good federal understanding of that, a good federal view of that? And what does it look like as agencies are trying to adopt? I mean, are they – because it seems from the outside like it's a little bit confusing. It seems like some of the efforts on AI, for example, are very much agency-specific, and then – the creation of these bodies that are supposed to be kind of taking responsibility, it seems like a lot of it is still kind of just feeling it out, and there's not a clear purpose. A lot of people I ask to get into specifics, it kind of, once you start to get into specifics, it gets a little mushy. So I guess just generally, what is your sense of the adoption of some of these emergent technologies that you guys are working on? And does it seem like the federal government has, in your experience, has a solid overarching view and strategy of those things, or is it currently still early days?
So I think it's early days. I think that it's amazing signs ahead of creating these bodies for really lessons learned across the board. The places where we've seen artificial intelligence get implemented and work and have really good use cases, like you said earlier, aren't the huge overarching programs, but they're proof of concepts. They're little wins that maybe make something a little bit easier for the analyst, or take this task from 1 hour to 15 seconds. So we're seeing those get implemented in a lot of places across the board. And I don't think that there has been a really good cohesive group that has brought a lot of those lessons learned, although I think there are a ton of lessons learned. So I think now's the time to bring a lot of those out so that you can have really good implementation across, and whether it's, you know, saving 5 hours for an analyst, or whether it's predicting veteran suicide, I think that there are going to be some of the same lessons learned, and there are going to be some of the same training data issues. Data issues across the board are going to be huge because you can't do AI and ML technologies without having good, clean data and good data sources. So I think that I think a lot of what these bodies are going to be talking about are how to make sure that they have their data in the right places, and really the lessons learned and how to implement across the board.
And I would love to get into that in our last segment. We need to take one final break here. But obviously, data is the thing that's at the heart of it all, both the work at USDS and the work at DECODE. And it's been a recurrent theme in a lot of recent administration, OPM, OMB conversations as well, because it's essential. So I'd love to talk about the status of that and some of the initiatives ongoing there. But we're going to take one more last break here on Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm your host, Ben Carnes, and we're here for the last segment of the morning, and I'm joined by Nicholas Holtz from the United States Digital Service, who works at the Department of Veterans Affairs and is working to help modernize the appeals process that veterans go through, and Megan Vorland, the Director of Programs at DECODE, which is an accelerator program that helps innovative small businesses connect to the federal government. And before the break, we were talking about your cohorts over at DECODE, Artificial Intelligence and Enterprise, and you're referencing the fact that at the heart of that is data. And at a recent panel I attended, that this seemed to be a serious concern. There were other people, representatives there from GSA, from USDA, OPM, OMB, and using the example of for example, FedScope, OPM, workforce data, much of the data that's out there, I think it's safe to say, is incomplete or is not very deep. Is that a problem that you are encountering frequently? Because for all of, you know, there's data.gov, there are a lot of these data troves and resources out there. But when you look at, for example, the Data Act, the Data Coalition, that was the first time that all federal, you know, financial data was made available in the same format, and that only happened in the last year or so. So many of these changes are still, you're still kind of late to the game in federal agencies. So for your work, obviously USDS, data is at the heart of everything you do. You can't work without it. And DECODE, I assume it's the same thing. I wonder. Partially, this is just my inner nerd having worked with federal data. the landscape is not always pleasant. So I'm wondering, are there initiatives? It seems like some people are saying the right things on cleaning up data and getting the data that's not deep enough, you know, fleshing that out. I assume you might have a better view into that of whether that's something that's on people's radar.
Yeah, that has been a major piece of some of the work we're doing. When you work with a system that is 40 years old, mm-hmm. and has been that entire time a manual data entry system,
yep.
There's a lot of ways that can cause pain, not just to the system users, but to those veterans who are waiting and, you know, expecting those benefits. And I mean, when users are having to constantly key in information over and over again, it's very easy to get things wrong. And I think that's we're human, and there's things that humans aren't the best at, but computers can do really well. And so the ability to, you know, integrate systems to look for the right data and to be able to share that data consistently throughout the processes so that veterans can see consistent results is a big piece of this. We have really focused on, I talked a little bit about the appeal status tool that we mm-hmm. launched back in March. And this is all data that has been it's been available for as long as the system has been in place. You know, we're taking that data and we aren't doing crazy special things with it, but we've worked to make sure that it's clean, that it's organized, and then we have been able to, you know, look really critically at how to make that data more transparent mm-hmm. so that the users who are most affected by it, the users who, you know, it's their data, like letting them see it, letting them know what the data that VA has about them says about them, so that they can, you know, understand what sort of decisions they need to make in this appeals process, so that they can better understand, you know, on the claim side, what benefits they might be eligible for and help them apply for those. And at the end of the day, you know, like veterans shouldn't have to keep sending their address mm-hmm. into VA over and over again because the systems aren't connected. And so, like, it's also just an ease of use aspect to it. A lot of this data is available in so many different places, often inconsistent because it has had to have been shared so frequently.
Yeah, and it's go ahead.
And we've seen use cases very, very similar to VA, where, you know, you might be Kenneth Miller in one system, you might be Ken Miller in another system. And so we've worked with a company called Tamer that'll actually take those and be able to merge those with a pretty good amount of accuracy. And they've done proof of concepts with DHS, TSA, right, taking all of those siloed data sources and merging them together. So we've worked with technologies like that. Also, a company called Stardog, which will take a whole bunch of different disparate systems and be able to roll them up and also say how the data is connected. So is Kenneth Miller married to Mary Miller, right? And be able to make those connections as well. So I think that we have seen on the private sector side a lot of really good tech that has tried to solve this problem for some of the private sector, whether that's insurance company, banks, et cetera. And now we're hoping to have some of those companies come into the government to solve the data problems on the government side too.
I mean, it seems like there's also a trend that the problems that you're solving, the solutions that are offered, I've often found this as a data layman who's only just getting into federal data, but some of the solutions and the outcomes are kind of obvious. They seem like maybe they would be, you know, you're maybe just charting out or graphing out something that's fairly simple, but because, you know, agency has not seen it because they're a little bit behind the times, et cetera, it seems like these small or seemingly small improvements can just be world changing. So I think that seems to be the case with when you're talking about veterans' appeals. I mean, it's one thing to talk about updating a form, but again, you're talking about impacting the process that the 400,000 or hundreds of thousands of people every year go through. And I want to just, we have about 6 or 7 minutes left, and just to kind of briefly pick your inner nerd brain a little bit, because just working on the data stuff, I wonder if there right now in the federal government or outside of it are any technologies that you're especially excited about seeing the implementation and the rollout of them, or anything that you're following especially closely.
Yeah, definitely. So I know I mentioned Tamer, I mentioned Stardog. Those are big on the data side. I think Uptake is going to be a really, really interesting player in doing a lot of the predictive maintenance. I think that's where we're going with a lot of the data in. You have tons and tons of sensors. Sensors are on everything, and you're getting a whole lot of data from that. Now, what do you do with that data, and how do you make better decisions? When it comes down to it, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make better decisions with all of the data that's coming in.
And that's predictive maintenance that is primarily being looked at by DOD?
So right now, DOD, but they also have really good use cases in like fleet management. So GSA for sure, Department of Transportation, so anything that's on rails, too, okay, would be really good use cases for them.
All right, that's fascinating. And what is the I believe the appeals system, and I'm sorry, the actual name of the system.
Caseflow.
So the Caseflow system, it has actually launched, correct? It was recent.
We have been iteratively developing it. The first piece of it launched in April of 2016, and it's a bunch of different applications. So you know, we've built out a number of tools, and we're iterating on them every day. Yes.
Okay. So those are in place. So those are the on the VA website right now.
These are all internal tools.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the external stuff like the appeal status, which launched in March, that is on vets.gov, and so it's taking the data that Caseflow is working to to help structure and improve and share that out on public-facing websites.
Well, it's very, very, very exciting work, obviously. And I guess on the we don't have a whole lot of time left here, but on the work over at the VA. If you can maybe just tell me about one of the cohorts you guys have going on right now.
Yeah, definitely. So we are doing we just opened applications for information security, so getting into that cyber realm, and we're really excited about the use cases across the government. Like I said, we'll have a lot of government folks coming in to really talk about their problems. So I know that Nicholas talked a lot about really specific VA problems and issues. Just imagine a startup. They never get to hear this. And so it is invaluable to have the government folks come to the table and say, these are the actual missions we're talking about, and these are the problems we're solving. And because these startups can actually solve those.
Yeah. And within the agencies right now, Nicholas, you're probably best positioned to address this. I'm curious what it looks like to address, to bring in the private sector perspective. Is that obviously you mentioned the coding challenges, et cetera, but beyond just the acquisitions and when you're in a formal business kind of relationship, is there a process by which you can seek that expert input from the private sector?
I think we're heading in that direction. I think that this is, and I say this as someone who was a longtime federal employee before joining Digital Service, mm-hmm. but there's a big tendency on the part of government, because they are all, government employees are experts in their field, to assume and believe that they have the answers and they know what the answer should be. Mm-hmm. But there are so many of these companies out there that I think are looking at things from very different perspectives. And so being able to open up and have that conversation and, ask for that expertise to come in and help identify what the real perfect solution is here. And so that you're going to have more successful products or projects, and you're going to be able to serve people better with the power of the federal government by combining, that scope and authority that government has with the ingenuity that a lot of these private companies have. And I think that really is the future of the federal tech space.
And we're running out of time coming into the last minute, but I wanted to take one more opportunity to thank both of you for joining me here on the program this morning. Once again, it's Nicholas Holtz from the United States Digital Service working on the Veterans Affairs team, and Megan Vorland, Director of Programs at Decode. Thank you both for being here this morning and for giving us an overview of what your organizations are working on.
Thanks so much for having us.
And thanks for tuning in this morning on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Have a great weekend.